Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Phase Zero, episode 35, starts right now. This is the biggest episode of all time. I'm your host, Brandon Davis, joined today by Aaron Perrine.
It's a hot one, folks. It's a hot one.
That's right. And we have Jenna Anderson in the virtual building.
Hey, everybody.
And we are just going to jump right into it, guys. We have a super exciting show because we are super excited about our guests today. They have the number one movie in the world right now. First of all, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings director Destin Daniel Cretton is on Phase Zero. We love a fist pump dance entry. We love it. Destin, thanks for hanging with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Of course. And we also have Shang-Chi himself, the man, the myth, the legend, Simu Liu on Phase Zero. Simu, man, welcome to the show.
There. Yeah.
What's up, everybody?
What's going on, dude? Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Marvel Universe. Unreal.
Thank you.
Of course. Listen, we like to start the show. Before we get to all of our congratulations and everything, we like to start the show with an icebreaker for everybody. So both of you are going to have to answer a very difficult question here of back in the Civil War days, were you Team Cap or Team Iron Man?
I'm always Team Cap.
Woo.
That's no diss on Iron Man, though, I don't think.
Simu, what was that?
Oh, sorry. No, I was just saying. I think Cap had his head on straight for that whole altercation.
We'll allow it. And I'm not going to weigh in because I don't agree. But listen, we're gonna dive into Shang-Chi. And first, we just have to start, obviously, just with huge congratulations, because you guys made a movie that you all should be very proud of. People are going out there. They're enjoying it. They're feeling pride while watching it. It's the number one movie in the world. I don't know how things could have gone better. And I'm congratulations to you both. And thank you for hanging with us while your movie is the number one movie in the world.
Really great to be here.
I would love to hear, man, following this amazing weekend, you know, how does the Marvel family, is there a group chat? Like, who has reached out to say congratulations? What's it been like? What has this felt like in the wake of opening weekend?
It's definitely felt like a knighting of some sort. Like, Tom Holland reached out, sent me this very enthusiastic voice memo, which was, just meant the world. Bree reached out. Loki wrote me this like massive, congratulatory email, which is so great. Tom and I had spoken briefly at Comic-Con. So it was a real full circle moment to hear from him. I mean, it really did feel like, you know, people were watching and in this moment they were there to celebrate with us, which is just meant the world.
That's really special.
I love that. So for Destin, this film has the highest Rotten Tomatoes audience score of a Marvel Studios movie. What does that mean to you to just see that people are resonating with it so profoundly?
Yeah, I mean, I try not to put too much of my self-worth on Rotten Tomatoes, but being able, going to some of these audience screenings and just hearing what people are talking about after the movie, what they're posting about, and that it is you know, it's a really wonderful mix of emotions that are not only excited about this movie as a Marvel movie, but I'm seeing parents who are dragged to the theater by their 20-year-old kids, and they're talking about their relationship online. That's really exciting. The cultural elements are really exciting. All of the human themes that are wrapped up in this movie, seeing people connect to them is really very satisfying to me.
So, Simu, let's start at the beginning, man. You got cast. You flew to San Diego. They don't tell you about the story of the film. You're just back there, like, nervous. How has this journey been? What was it like stepping out onto that stage for the first time?
It was completely the most overwhelming thing in the world. It was the craziest experience of my entire life. It was like, I'd never gone out on stage in front of 8,000 people. Have you guys? I don't like it's that. That's a lot of people. I literally saw like rows for like going into the darkness. Like I as far as I could see. Like there were like 8,000 people is a lot of people. And then top it all off, I think we were following the Eternals, if I remember correctly. And so it was like Angelina Jolie was on stage, Selma Hayek was on stage. I mean, all of the Eternals were on stage. And then it was like Destin and me for the next. And we had to march on up there, and we're like, look, I know you were just talking to Angelina Jolie, but guess what? You're talking to this guy now. And I had to, what I really wanted to do, what was really my goal, is to just bring every single person along with me to experience that sense of wonderment, that sense of just totally like almost childlike joy that I was feeling of just being in a, like just there for the first time. I tried to just show the world how excited I was rather than how nervous I was. And so hopefully that came through.
Nailed it. I love it. I want to bring in our first question, because we are going to talk spoilers for Shang-Chi and Legend of the Ten Rings. If you have not seen the movie yet, we are talking spoilers. And our first question we put out a call for journalism students and for recent graduates to be a part of the show. And Cheyenne reached out. I think she has a great question, but it is a spoiler for the film in some ways. So I want to bring Cheyenne into the show so she can take the floor and ask and be a part of the show.
Hello. Hi, nice to meet you. And congratulations on the movie. I saw it. Big, big excitement going around. I just want to say, first and foremost, I too am Team Cap, so there's that. but my question is, yes. So my question for you, I know the Chinese dragon symbolizes a lot in Chinese culture, and obviously the Great Protector is like a big part of that final act. So I want to know what the dragon symbolizes for you personally, each of you. And then how did the movie strengthen your connection to the culture and your core beliefs?
I mean, from a writing standpoint, we wanted to wrap the essence of what the Chinese water dragon represents into really what the essence of Shang-Chi's mom, Li, and that her spirit and the way that she moves. We always imagine that we were in that there was a symbiotic relationship between her spirit and the spirit of the dragon. One of the big emotional moments for me of the movie is when Shang-Chi is underwater and he finally wakes up by kind of being revived by the breath of this dragon. And when he's looking into the eyes of that dragon, it's an emotional moment for me, because I feel like in a way he is looking into the eyes of his mom.
I love that. And Simu, is there any answer from you?
I mean, the dragon for me in that moment symbolizes, I mean, it's an important moment for Sean, because it's the moment at which he embraces his destiny. And I just feel like it's very fitting that that moment is that moment that he literally grabs onto, such an emblem of, you know, Chinese mythology. It's in a way, it's showing the connectedness, you know, how connected he has become with who he is, with where he's come from. And his journey over the course of the movie is very much about self-discovery, self-acceptance, and then self-love. And I feel like at that moment, you know, that's when the audience sees, you know, for the very first time, a fully formed superhero. And I also, you know, there's a part of me as a Marvel fan that also sees the coming of that dragon as like, oh boy, like that is the Marvel, you know, that is the Marvel climax. That is like, you know, because, you know, this movie was never going to be supposed to be about a son beating the crap out of his dad. You know, like there's just nothing narratively really interesting about that. But, you know, just seeing that final moment. I think it's just like seeing us be a part of that massive kind of climax is so empowering. And, sorry, there's a lot of noise going on.
You're good. I think that was all Shia. I think that's a great question, and I'm really glad you asked it. And I just want to thank you for coming on the show and bringing that awesome energy.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Cheyenne. All right, so I have a question for you. Speaking of like that climax, when I was watching the movie, I've seen it 3 times now. There's the moment where the camera is looking up at you. You're dancing through the air, the music, like that, the theme song comes in, you're working the 10 rings, destroying the insides of another dragon, which was amazing. But it's just that moment where the camera looks up, and I would love to hear for you, because that feels like the moment where he fully is, you are a superhero. When you saw that for the first time, like, you know, what happens to a person when you see yourself like that? Because I can't imagine that's unreal.
It's obviously it is very much an unreal moment, and you know, Destin did a very, very good job. I will say we spent many a moon in an all like a just a blue soundstage, and so all I remember of actually shooting that whole sequence is like, first of all, we're shooting it at something like 120 frames a second. So I was doing like the fastest acting of my life, where I had to like react to so many things, because I would be moving in slow motion. So I had to do everything pretty much like twice or three times as fast. And just remember that being kind of what was going through my mind as I was filming it. So seeing it all kind of come together, and with the post-production and the VFX and the, you know, the music and the score, which is amazing. It made me quite emotional, and I think really just punctuates the end of, at least for this movie, the end of Sean's arc and his journey. Excited to see what other adventures kind of lie in store for the character.
I mean, since we're talking about that moment, what I really love about how Simu played it is that specific moment. Simu was like, we actually, that one wasn't shot at 120. It was all the underwater stuff that we shot like super high speed. That one was because we wanted to make sure that we're capturing your performance. We didn't shoot it at a high speed, but I remember talking to you about about that scene. And there's the obvious way to play it, which would have been just the I'm a hero way to play it. But what I loved about the way Simu plays it, if you watch his performance closely, he's going through the emotions basically of the movie over the course of that one shot. And you see him kind of step into his power by the time he does his final move. But he's going through like the pain, the insecurities, the childhood, and then the empowerment from both mom and dad. Like it's a very unique way to play that moment, and it makes it very emotional for me.
It was probably one of my favorite moments. Just seeing it came, it was really, it all landed right there. It all culminated for all of you, yeah, kind of in that moment. I thought that was brilliant. Yeah.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter your search based on the qualities that are most important to you. Then you can book a free 15-minute consultation call with any therapist you're interested in seeing, so you can get a feel for whether they're the right fit before you commit to a full-length session. Alma also makes it easy for mental health care providers to navigate insurance. That's why 95% of therapists in their directory accept insurance for sessions, so you can find care that's affordable without stressing about the paperwork. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy60 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy60.
Aaron, I think you have the next question here.
Yeah, Simu. So Mayer said in our interview that she punched you during your first fight sequence. Do you remember that? Like, was it a hard shot? Like, are you good? Like, what happened?
I don't remember. I don't even know if I felt it. I think it probably just ricocheted off of my cheekbone. And I was just like, oh, did you touch me? I didn't even feel it. I'm sure she hit me lots of times. And when she wasn't hitting me, when we were rehearsing that brother sister fight, I would still be getting banged up because she has by far the boniest elbows of anybody that I have ever sparred with at all. So it was not it's not a pleasant experience. My arm and my forearms give a little bit of cushion, and hers just were not generous. So probably wasn't the first or the last time that she punched me. And she probably loved it way more than she should have, but, that's how you know you have a really solid, brother sister dynamic. Destin, I remember this one like crew, because when we first landed in Australia before we started shooting, we had like a little bit more free time, like not much, but still a little bit. We would have like dinners with all the heads of department and the creatives every week. And I remember very clearly the first week that Munger came. It was like a couple of weeks after we had started, and she came down to test, and then she got the role. And, we were talking to her for the first time, and, we both knew that she was absolutely the right person for the role, but you were like, your first assignment is to fart in front of each other. he was like, that is the one thing that will really cement the brother sister dynamic, is that you have to fart in or around each other, possibly on each other. We were like, thanks. So such is the visionary level directing. It's just, it's so all
encompassing. Did anyone do it?
No, I don't like, I'm not a farter in front of people. That is
I'm with you on that.
I do not. Because where there is a noise, there's also a smell. And I just, that's too much for me.
Where there is a comfortability.
I thought there was something, missing in your, relationship on screen. I guess that was it. We'll save it. We'll save it for the next one.
I should have trusted you. I should have given myself the process. Yeah.
Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Farts, 2024. Oh my God. let's talk about some of the Marvel of it all, the MCU of it all, and I want to talk about Wong and Abomination, Destin. And I'm sure you've talked about them quite a bit. It's really exciting to see a character like Abomination be brought back. It's exciting to see Wong get more screen time and get to develop in Shang-Chi. I want to talk about, though, Tim Roth and Abomination, like, because he hasn't played this role in a decade. So I'd love to hear, like, you know, how did you work with him on this? Did he do any motion capture, any dialogue, the grunting, or anything like that? How did you bring Abomination back to life?
Tim came into the studio and did some grunts and things. He's not in this movie for very long, so there's not a ton to talk about, but Tim is a lovely man and a wonderful performer. I wish we had more material for it an actor of his stature than just doing grunts, but that's all we had in this movie.
Well, so kind of going off of that, I know at the end of their brief sequence in the film, both Wong and Abomination step through a portal, and a bunch of people have been speculating about what that could be. Like, does that have a holding cell for Abomination, or what is the deal with that? Can you say anything about what that location is and where they were going?
Yeah, I can say that you will find out very soon.
Oh.
Okay. All cool. Right. Looking forward to that. Is there a?
I can also say that the decisions of everything that people are speculating about were big discussions, and they are there for a reason that I think will be revealed fairly soon. I think
that's exciting. Are you guys going to ever release like a blooper reel or like an outtake session that we can all kind of crack up with you guys watching?
There was one made that I thought was really, that made me laugh quite a bit. And I don't know. I have no idea if.
I have also seen such a video. So I can confirm that such a product exists, but in what capacity, how it will be introduced to the world remains to be seen. It's a mystery.
It was
pretty fun, though, wasn't it, Seaman? I had a good time watching.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, Nora is so quick and so funny, and I think she is responsible for easily like 50% of that gag reel. But it was at least the one that I watched, and it was so good, and really just I love watching the BTS stuff because it really just takes me back to. Just takes me back to when we were shooting. Just felt like a simpler time, you know, just going to work every day and making this movie. It was really, really one of the most incredible times of my life.
I love that you call it a simpler time.
All I had to worry about was what scenes I was shooting and what was our next stunt sequence. Now it's like you have 50 interviews and you have to do, you know, you had to do this podcast with Brendan Davis. You had to pretend to like him.
You're doing a great job so far, honestly. No, well, listen, I can only imagine, like, that's why when you first connect to this, I like profusely thank you for the time, because I know you guys, like, I remember that press tour, you're going from interview to interview, you're going from country to country, man. So I know it's a lot, but we genuinely appreciate you guys coming on here and giving us more of your time.
I mean, this is nice, because it's not just this, you know, the same question over and over every 4 minutes. this is actually a conversation. So
I got to agree with you on that. I love being able to kind of dive in a little more. It feels a little more personal, but Aaron, go ahead.
Okay. And now to not let them down by asking the same question over again. Simu, when he said that we would find out soon, you showed some emotion there. You've been a fan of Marvel for a long time. How hard is it for you not to geek out when there are Easter eggs like the extremist soldier or one of the widows in the background? Like, you're still very much a fan of this whole thing. How hard is it for you not to geek out and like catch on and ask questions of everybody? Like, what's going on? Like, what else is coming next?
It's very difficult. I'm writing on my Marvel blog as we speak. Abomination and Wong team up Disney Plus show confirmed. Sources close to the MCU say, you know. it's so funny though. I was all about those like speculative websites before I joined the MCU, and then you know, actually became like, I went over onto the other side and I became a part of the movie making team. And it was really funny seeing the report, like the theories that even would come up as we were shooting in Australia. And like, I don't want to, because I guess we're technically not supposed to speculate on rumors and stuff, but they were just like the stuff that they were throwing out. And like, I mean, it would be impressive. It would be like detailed movie plots that frankly will never exist. And then just like reading it and being like, wow, these guys got some talent. It really just shows you how rabid and dedicated the Marvel fan base is. And I definitely consider myself among one of them. So yeah, it is hard not to geek out. That's probably why they keep information from me so much.
Don't be the next Tom Holland or Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah. So that end credit scene, I didn't know about it or what was going on until like 2 days before we shot it. It was like, I didn't even have time to write it on my blog. We had to go shoot it immediately.
So what you're saying is Mephisto confirmed. All right.
Mephisto confirmed. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, so going off of kind of the rabid fandom and people speculating and picking up details, are there any Easter eggs in this movie that fans haven't spotted yet, or that you are surprised that they've already spotted?
I mean, there's a lot of different types of Easter eggs in this movie, not only Marvel Easter eggs. There's cultural Easter eggs that a lot of people are picking up on. I mean, even when you just walk down the hall of the Fight Club, if you look at each of the fights that are going on in each of those, it was very important to Brad Allen and his team to try to represent the different, very, very different cultural styles from all over East Asia. And so there's Easter eggs, there's martial arts Easter eggs hidden throughout the movie as well. I'm not going online and I don't know what people have really caught on to or not, but there's a lot to find.
Yeah. I love the ABC line. Like, you speak ABC because that, so a lot of people did it. I'm one of the people, like, just call me a dumb, like, uncultured white dude, I guess. I really, like, I didn't know that ABC meant American born Chinese. And I thought it was just like a joke, like ABC means English. And I was like, oh, and I laughed. And then I learned what it meant. And I was like, this is a sort of representation and joke that means more to more people that finally get to like have their humor and something like that represented on screen. I thought it was great.
You're not a dumb, uninformed white guy. I mean, that's the whole purpose of, you know, moments like that. We don't explain it. And, you know, the decision not to explain it, I think really is one that, encourages those conversations and that sharing. And I think, you know, I think at the end of the day, if this movie was just made for Asian people or just made for Asian Americans, I think it would ultimately fail. I think it really is a movie for everybody, and it's meant for everybody to be included in the conversation, and it's meant to be a bridge to, you know, to invite, you know, everybody to take part of this celebration. So, yeah, lots of Easter eggs. I actually really love. I read a couple of articles breaking down the Mandarin that is used in the movie and how some of the subtitles don't do the full line justice, that there is like a color there's a color to the original intent of the Mandarin line. And I love that. I think, you know, there are some really, really great ones, and it's just great that, that people are calling attention to it.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
That would be a shout out to Nova for, who was our, interpreter, who was kind of by my side throughout the entire process. And we would go back and forth as to, we had the English version of every line, but when we were speaking Mandarin, Mandarin language, I mean, Simu has the brain for it. I'm just like, she gives me five completely different ways to say the simple line that we want in English, and explains to me the context of each. And it's such a rich poetic language that I definitely could not even come close to doing what we did without having Nova next to me the entire process.
I love that. I also love the name Nova. I think that's a great name. It is a great name. And I want to bring in actually another one of our fans here who I think has a great question based on what we just talked about. Kate, Richard, if you could bring Kate into the show. Kate, I'm going to give you the floor. This is Simu and Destin. And go ahead.
Hi, Kate.
Hi. Nice to meet both of you. Congratulations on the incredible success you've had. As an Asian immigrant who grew up in Toronto and moved to the U.S., I'm so inspired by your career, Simu. And my question for both of you is how you feel about the impact this movie will have on future Asian representation in your respective industries.
Wow. Did you see that claim from Simu when you said Toronto? That was, there it is again.
Hands in the air, baby. Six.
Okay, the camera's on me, so I guess I think similar to Black Panther before it in 2018, I think this movie is another step forward in this conversation of who can lead tentpole blockbusters. You know, what are the stories that resonate across a global audience? I think it's really encouraging, just based on the results just of the last few days, that people are absolutely willing to see new faces and you know, watch new stories, watch stories that have cultural relevance, maybe one that is different than the one that they grew up in. You know, I think people want to listen to different languages and want to be exposed to new and exciting ideas and all of that. So, you know, from an actor perspective, I think it's very encouraging, and it's very, you know, meaningful to me that we have such an awesome community too, that is, you know, seemingly just really come together and galvanized and at a grassroots level, even just planning out theater buyouts and just organizing mass screenings and everything. I just really, really touched by how much, you know, this has meant for our entire community. So I think it's, you know, gone a long way in dispelling this notion that, you know, lead role should only be played by one type of people.
Hey, that's, man, you did that. You guys did that. Be proud of it, you know? So Kate, honestly, great job. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Kate.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. We'll talk to you soon. I want to get into the...
Destin wanted to add something to that.
Oh, you go ahead.
Did you? I mean, I don't know how you feel, Simu, but this last, especially over this weekend, and I mean, everyone's talking about box office, which is wonderful, but like for me, it's been a long time since I've experienced just getting so excited about my own culture and alongside a community that has a reason to get excited. And I went to a couple of these community screenings that were where a community came together and raised funds to send, you know, young Asian American boys and girls from a boys and girls club over in San Gabriel Valley. I went to a screening out there, and the level of buzz and excitement was just so, it was so cool to be a part of that. And I think a lot of us have, it's just been, you know, long 2.5 to 2 years stretch of not having these moments of being collectively excited. And that to me has been one of the most special things about this weekend.
Mm-hmm. I want to drop this Facebook group called Subtle Asian Traits. I don't know if anybody is familiar with it. But Subtle Asian Traits is a Facebook group started by Asian students in Australia. And it's grown to this like over 2 million member kind of big cultural hub where we talk about everything from like parental expectations to like boba memes and stuff. And, you know, I've been an avid member and poster for, you know, three or some odd years, but, it's been really exciting seeing people resonate so deeply with this movie and talking about how they feel seen in a totally new way. And, you know, talking about how for one of the first times in their lives, they feel proud of who they are, you know, because growing up in, based on whatever was going on in our lives or what we saw in the media, we were kind of made to feel ashamed that this, you know, marked a real turning point for so many people. So, yeah.
Destiny. I think that's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. Like it's amazing to see that. Like you could say this is like a Marvel movie or something like that, but it really is bigger than any just like superhero flick. Like it really can impact so many people in so many different ways, and stick with them. And I think it's awesome. And I think they picked the right people for the jobs. I'm really happy for all of you who get to feel, you know, that pride. So. Yeah. I want to talk about the post-credit scenes a bit because we are coming towards the end of the show here. And so we're going to talk about the end of the movie. This is spoilers for anybody who's joining us live. But in the post-credit scenes of Shang-Chi, the one that got the big audible gasps in the theater was including Bruce Banner, Mark Ruffalo, and Carol Danvers and Brie Larson. I will ask you, were you all on set together? Or was this because they were holograms? So I don't know if you were able to get away with kind of adding people in. How did that go down?
They were holograms, you know, practically because those characters would not be able to be in that same room in the MCU, like they're because of what they are up to in other areas of the MCU. They were also holograms because there's no way with COVID that we could have got those actors together. So we were not in the same room. So when you see Simu performing, he's like, what were you looking at? Were you looking at a ball? I don't know what you're looking at.
I was looking at a ball, maybe some highlighter tape attached to the ball.
And just like really imagining Brie and Mark
really just doing my best. Well, if you remember, we had those, we had like lookalike stand-ins.
Yeah.
More distracting than that. So we actually had them like stand behind the bookcases and just say their lines. But, it was a challenge, but I mean, hey, I spent three, you know, that whole dragon climax, you know, acting to a laser pointer. So, I was well versed by then. It was a lot of fun, and that scene for a lot of reasons. You know, first of all, Benedict Wong, who plays Wong, was there on the day with us, and he is just absolutely incredible to act with. He you know, just is so, like, you know, it very much felt like we were in his wheelhouse. Like stepping onto the set, it was like, you know, parts of Camartage that had been assembled together. So first of all, huge, massive geek moment for me, but like to then have him step onto the set and he's got his hands behind his back, he's wearing the whole tunic and he's got the look, he's got the Wong look, you know, it just really felt like he owned the place and we were all just visitors. And then, you know, when he turns to our characters and he says, from now on, the trajectory of your lives will be like nothing you've ever known. I mean, I can't tell you on how, like, just how deep a level I feel those words as Simu, because I really do feel like I've joined the circus, and maybe Destin, you feel the same way of just like, well, we're in it now.
Welcome to the circus, man.
That's amazing. Yeah. So Destin, I know you've worked with Brie countless times on other projects. Short Term 12 is one of my favorite movies, so it's a joy to get to talk to you and to see you guys work again in this context. What was it like to kind of reunite in this massive franchise and be able to work together again?
It was really cool. When she showed up, I went and said hi to her in her trailer, and we caught up a bit because I hadn't seen her in a while. And then I went to set, we got everything ready for her. And then she stepped onto set as Captain Marvel. And that's the first time I've ever seen her in that costume up close. And it was super surreal. We both just started laughing because, I mean, I think Simu and I had many moments like this too, where we just look at each other just going like, what the hell are we doing here? That's how we felt on that stage. Like when we're on that stage in front of those 8,000 fans, we're just like, as soon as we stepped off, we started laughing. And that's what it was between Brie and I on that set. We're just like, what am I doing in that director's chair? And what are you doing in that suit? But yeah, it was a joy to see her.
So for both of you, the popular fan theories think that the Ten Rings could be related to some dragons. They think that the MCU has some McLuhans coming into play. Is there anything you can tell us about that beacon and the theories that you've seen? Simu, it seems like you're well-versed. It seems like you might know what's going on.
I don't. I just know what I published in my blog. You know, it's really just a lot of speculation based on what you guys say. I just basically steal whatever articles that Brendan writes and I put it on my blog. No, I mean, I know all the source material, but I also know in all the ways that we just kind of will take source material and throw it, like, you know, Luke's lightsaber in the beginning of The Last Jedi, like, you know, and I think we do it in a way that always benefits story, you know, that we treat source material not as like chains that bind us, but as kind of guiding lights along the way to finding story. And so, you know, that's part of why Shang-Chi is so resonant, is because we didn't make the 1970s version of that character or his dad, which would have been super racist. So, you know, if you were to ask me, do I have any idea where we're going with the rings or the signal or anything like that, I would say absolutely not. No more than the most speculative of Marvel websites.
Listen, if the Marvel actor thing doesn't work out, we might have a spot for you at comicbook.com.
Nice.
They have an
open. Nice. So confirmed. And then the clue is in there.
I do think you guys, the interaction between fans and Marvel is so unique and special, all the way through the process, having that amount of engagement and how many people have seen the movie 3-4 times just to pick out more things. That's like a filmmaker's dream. It's an actor's dream. It's anybody who's working in cinema to have that amount of participation is crazy. The thing to be careful of, though, if you really want something to happen in the future, be careful about shouting your theories too loud, because we're not going to do it. Like we want to keep. We don't want to do the thing that everyone's expecting. So there's some good ideas that are being like thrown out there that we're like, damn, okay, we can't do that.
Nice. We have to do that something out there. It's not fresh anymore.
I love it. And my last question for you before we bring in these last two fans is the we see Bruce Banner and not the Hulk. I'd love to hear about, did you ever consider bringing in the Hulk, or was it always going to be Bruce with the arm in the sling post Endgame?
Yes.
What is yeah, we've considered, we always consider everything. So yeah, we've considered that, I'm sure.
That's a talking point note, isn't it?
Breaking news, breaking news, breaking news.
We consider, no, I love it. I love it. That's cool. If I didn't ask about the Hulk, the Marvel fan, the same Marvel fandom that is awesome would have been like, hey, the hell's wrong with you? Why didn't you ask about the Hulk? So I just got myself covered there. And okay, so we have two
like
more
fans. Is there like a Hulk themed show and or movie that's about to be released soon? Or it's, that might answer those questions. I don't.
Might be. It might be. I don't know. I'm not familiar with the slate, but there might be something coming. I want to bring on our next fan here. He used to write for his school sports newspaper. Very interested in getting into journalism. His name is Cyan, and I hope I said that right. It's Cyan, right, Richard? If you can bring Cyan into the show, Cyan. I've said it like five times now, so I really hope I said it right.
You're good. You're good. It's Scion. I tell people.
Scion. Oh my God. Yeah, there. See, I told Simu, I am that dumb.
You're good. You're good. You're not the only one. Trust me. But yeah, nice to meet you guys, Simu and Destin. Congratulations on an amazing movie, by the way. But just wanted to ask, of all the projects that Marvel like has already announced, where would you guys want to see Shang-Chi appear next?
Ooh. What do you think, Simu?
What if? I think what if? Sure. That's the one place to go to be free of any sort of expectation, any sort of audience preconceived notions. I think you go to what if and literally anything is possible. Like a multiverse where Sean runs a Marvel blog and you just follow him as he sleuths around, you know, in and around the offices and tries to get the inside scoop on all the heroes. It'll be like Gossip Girl, but it'll be Sean.
It's where Sean becomes J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. This What If Today was amazing, by the way. We're going to talk about it on next week's episode, but the zombies episode was fantastic. So, but I don't want to spoil What If since we are talking Shang-Chi. Yeah. It's really good. Listen, dude, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you guys for having me.
And Shang-Chi confirmed for What If.
Thanks, Sion.
Sion was awesome. This is Mai, and Mai is our last fan question here. Mai is awesome. I talked to Mai yesterday. Mai, go ahead.
Hi, guys. Congratulations. Hi, Mai. Congratulations on the film. It was incredible. My question is for Destin. I was wondering why you chose to include Hotel California in the movie. I asked this because it's my dad's favorite song, and he's always wanted to hear it in a Marvel movie because he loves the soundtrack. So hearing it on top of all the amazing Asian representation made everything so much more special.
That's so unique that it's your dad's favorite song and he's always wanted to hear it in a Marvel movie.
Yeah, I know.
Hotel, I don't know what it is about Hotel California, but I've loved that song for a very long time. There was a time when the Eagles had a live performance that was constantly on loop on all of the TVs at Costco, and I just heard that song so many times. Every time I heard it, I'd find myself standing in front of those TVs watching the entire performance. And it's a long song. And so I've been wanting to get it into a movie for a long time. And it just felt right this time. It wasn't easy to get either. We actually, I don't know if you know this, Steve, but we had to pitch the Eagles the reason why the song exists and how it is integrated into the relationship of Katie and Sean in order to get the song.
I did not know that.
Maybe you guys can help confirm this, but I believe it's one of the first times Hotel California has ever been in a movie.
Well, I'm going to have to dig into that. You also got Lil Nas X in there too. Little Old Town Road.
A little Old Town Road. We got some karaoke classics. We got A Whole New World, which was sung at one of our first kind of crew socials. So, we wanted to get that in there. And there were, I think there were like four or five different songs that we had on that very quick karaoke shoot day, that we kind of just cycled through, and they, and, you know, you just kind of picked and chose what worked, what was good. Like a little bit of Aerosmith, I think, made it in there. Yep. Just like, just a little taste.
Yep.
Love it. I love, those were super fun scenes that we got to see there. Mai, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
See you. Thanks. All right. We do got to wrap up. So we have the two last questions of the day. These are the most important questions, which I'm sure will have the longest answer possible. Ooh. Because these are the ones that I'm sure you can give really clear, definitive answers to.
No pressure at all. No pressure. So after the successful opening weekend, the record-breaking opening weekend, have you guys been told about Shang-Chi 2 is officially happening? Is there anything you can hint at? How long would we have to wait for a sequel? Because clearly people want to see more.
would you like to answer this question?
Kevin is texting Simu right now saying, don't do it.
My security clearance has been higher.
I have no idea what I can disclose about that, to be honest. So I do not want to get in trouble.
That means that there's nothing to disclose. That means it's not nothing. He knows something, guys. He knows.
That's fair. We're going to analyze that. We're going to call in some body language detectives to figure out what you know. We're going to get it figured out. And Simu, we're going to have to ask you a similar question.
How about I answer it like this? Everybody at Marvel, everybody at Disney, from the top down, all called me personally to congratulate me, not only about the success of this weekend, but how much the movie meant to them. So everybody is very excited about this character and the future of this character.
Love it. I can't wait to
the movie, huh?
What's that?
I was like, it's a shame that he dies at the end of the movie, huh?
All right, so we need to wrap this up. Simu, last thing for you. Everybody wants to know. I gotta ask. Are you in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness?
I cannot comment or speculate on any rumor.
Done. That's it. We're done with it. We're wrapping this up. We are done. No, honestly,
to be a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I look forward to continuing and when the opportunity presents itself.
Played like a master of the martial arts. We love it. Congratulations on a huge opening weekend. We're going to wrap up Phase Zero today right there. Honestly, Simu, Destin, huge congrats. Huge thanks for coming on the show. I know you got more to get to, so can't thank you enough for being a part of Phase Zero. And everybody who has been a part of the show, to our four journalism students and super fans of the Marvel Universe, and everybody who has watched us live and is listening in podcast form, it means the world that you support us, that you're supporting Shang-Chi, and that we get to do stuff like this. So thank you to everybody for making today so special.
Thank you,
Brendan. It was a blast.
All right, Richard, send us out of here. Thanks, everybody.